Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamond, and you're very welcome to a podcast which is all about the Irish League. And did we just see the title decided in the space of less than a minute on a hair-raising Tuesday night? Yes, we're back for a second helping of the pod this week to recap a season-defining set of fixtures that will very likely go down in Irish League folklore. We ask, is there still hope for the Blues? What did Lorne do to survive the scares? And we're also taking a deeper look at Ballymena's difficult season after they secured a relegation playoff at worst. And we'll also run our eyes over that Northern Ireland Football Awards team of the season. You know the drill. Thanks for checking this out on this bonus episode of Kicking Match. Before we get the show on the road, if you are a chronological enthusiast and you don't want to skip ahead in the never-ending series that is Kicking Match, yes, this is the second pod of the week. Who says they don't give you value? I recorded a cracking episode actually with Lewis Bennett over the weekend, reviewing the games from Friday and Saturday past, plus the most in-depth championship chat you will find anywhere ahead of the penultimate games this Saturday. So if you haven't checked that out already, you can of course do that right now. It's the episode just before this one. Don't worry, we'll be sitting here waiting for you. But if you're up to date, let's chat Tuesday's thriller of an evening in the company of the former sports editor of the Ballymena Times. It's Stephen Alexander.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I posted online about how do we have a name for what went down, because it just swapped and changed so quickly. We've all seen these late goals, but if you weren't at a game and you were watching it via this stream produced by the BBC where they were going across the games, you saw the goal go in, final minute for Lorne. It's an OG, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, they've done it. Lorne have done it. They've got the win. They keep themselves alive. And then mere seconds later, they flip over to Windsor, and it's Shevlin running away, and you're double-taking going, this has not happened. This has not happened. We went from Lorne looking like they're in control, then Linfield come back, Lorne fall away because it's a draw. It was pandemonium from a footballing perspective. It's why I love all these games being played at the one time. The title race, I knew it was going to have sparks, but this just ignited last night.
I think, Peter, Tuesday night's scenario, if that had appeared in the plot of a Hollywood film, you'd have dismissed it as too far-fetched to be even considered realistic. It's extraordinary to think that after all the hours and minutes and the blood, sweat and tears that has gone into the Premiership season to this point, it may have been decided by events happening virtually simultaneously at two different venues. I mean, that Tuesday night, you have to be talking about that. It's possibly maybe the most dramatic evening in the Irish League since, if you go back to all those years, to the famous Morgan Day when Glentoran snagged the
title. Is something Morgan Day-esque about this, isn't it? But it's because it's across two different games.
It certainly was. I got home, Peter, and I was still thinking about it. I'd driven home and I'd been at the Oval. And I was driven home and I was still thinking about it. And I went to bed a while after I came home. And my mind was just still buzzing about what I had seen and just the sheer drama of it all. It was almost sort of pure theatre in a sense.
Theatre it is. And I know in years gone by, there's that famous year where the trophy was in a helicopter because they didn't know if it was going to be going to Glavin, Portadown, Linfield. It was all over the place, and it isn't exactly like that, but the contrasting emotions, where if you took that and looked it back as if it's one of those deep documentaries that looks back on this game, and it starts with fairly even side, you've got Corrin going up the Linfield, Lorne taking on Glentoran at the Oval, Lorne take the early enough lead, they've looked fairly unflappable over the season, and then the ball's thrown into Linfield's court. And despite not having a great start to the half, Coleraine put a bit of pressure on the Blues, and there's McGonagall rushing through, putting the ball in the back of the net. And there's Lorne fans thinking, yes, this is the way it goes. Stay at this. Going at halftime, massive advantage to Lauren. It's exactly what they want. Hold what you have. Off the back of halftime, Linfield pull one back. Then they take the lead from a penalty. First Fitzpatrick gets a nudge on the ball, goes in. 1-1, Linfield come out well. Then there's a little bit of theatrics, if we'll use that word, around a penalty. There's a foul. Originally, the referee points to outside the box. All of the Linfield players surround the referee and say, go talk to the linesman, please. Please talk to the linesman. And he looked like he wasn't going to do that. And then he dandered on over, talks to the linesman. And of course, why are the Linfield players wanting to chat to the linesman? Because he told the referee that it was inside the box. There you have the penalty. 2-1. Linfield, take the sweat off your brow. You're back in control. And just as that this happens, a unfortunate from a Lauren point of view, a pandemonium-esque moment where it's an OG, a shot from far out, bounces off Bulger, loops over the goalkeeper. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. And that was the situation for the last 20 minutes or so of both games. Linfield overtaking Lauren. Lauren trying to pull back and get that goal. And it was like that until the final minute in both games. Both games had lots of extra time. And from your perspective, from your point of view, how did you experience this all flip on a dime in the dying embers of both games?
To be honest, Peter, I thought, as I say, I was at the Oval, and I thought that game was just simply petering out into a draw. I thought Glentoran did quite a good job on Lauren. Obviously, they got that freakish own goal, which you were describing there. I think it was one of those where Shea McCartan put the ball into the area. I think if you gave Cian Bulger 100 attempts to do what he did, I don't think he would be able to do it. Just one of those freakish things where he swung at it, and as soon as it looked off his foot, I'm immediately thinking, that's going in over the goalkeeper. It dropped like a stone over Rowan Ferguson's head. And that obviously that brought the sides level. And at that point, Larne didn't create an awful lot in the second half. I thought in terms of, certainly, obviously, it's difficult when you compare it with their performance at the weekend where they just annihilated Cliftonville. But I thought Larne really sort of struggled to go through the gears on Tuesday night.
All their composure was gone.
Yeah,
Where was this team who... No, it was the 10 men of Cliftonville, but where was this free-flowing, industrious, cocky, cocksure team? They had to get a goal away from home, and sometimes they couldn't string three passes together.
Yeah, it was a very sort of Larne-esque performance. As you say, it probably lacked a bit of composure there. But again, football being what it is, who was the player who crossed the ball? And it was a sort of just kind of hopefully helping the ball back into the penalty area. It was Cian Bulger who crossed it. And again, I saw Johnny Russell stretch for it, and I saw him touch it. And again, a bit like the Bulger own goal at the other end, I thought, that's in. And it sort of it trickled what seemed like an eternity to actually trickle over the line.
It took a lifetime. You didn't know if it was going to stop in the grass, if it was going to go either side of the post, especially after that header, I believe, from Ryan at the corner. You were thinking, is this going to bounce in off the inside of the post again? That took an eternity, as you said.
Yeah, there. The Ryan header, I think it hit the underside of the bar. It came down, hit the inside of the post. It bounced over Aaron McCary's head, and there was nobody there. And of course, was it in? And the BBC pictures were able to quickly dispel that notion. It wasn't actually anywhere near crossing the line, that header. But when the unfortunate one goal from Johnny Russell did, when you mentioned the word pandemonium earlier, I think I really did discover sort of what pandemonium really meant once that goal went in, because the scenes on the terraces behind that the goal that Larne were attacking, that was just absolutely incredible. And there was Glentoran players lying on their backs in the penalty area with their head in their hands there. It was an awful way to lose a game, but in the context of what it does for Larne, obviously then the sort of the LARN people who were around me were jubilant about that, but that was absolutely nothing to what happened about 60 seconds later whenever the news of Matthew Shepland's equaliser at Windsor
Because
came back to me.
forgetting what was happening on a Windsor Park, Lorne needed to do what they needed to do, and getting a win there was sealing the deal. Didn't matter if it happened in the 3rd minute or the 93rd minute, and this happened in the 95th or whatever it was. They needed to get a win to keep pace. Games are running out for both of them, and they're happy if you're the team that was in front, and they wanted that advantage going into next Monday's game. So they were just happy that they've got the win. So you talk about a cherry on top. What for Linfield then to lose the 3 points, the drop down to it being a draw in the final moments of their game is something else. It's like you've just won the lottery twice in the space of 30 seconds. How did you experience that news filtering down? I know you've got the perspective of being press and you're not there on the pitch. You know, we don't know when the players find out, but when did you find out watching it live in the Oval that it had all turned around at Windsor Park?
Yeah, it came. I was watching the BBC coverage on my tablet in the press box at the Oval. So, as I say, we were just getting everything sort of put together, describing that goal on the live text, that LARN goal. Again, as you say, the thought had crossed my mind, well, look, there's LARN have done what they have had to do. You know, both teams are going to win tonight. It's going to be that 1 point advantage going into the big game. And then I just happened to glance at my tablet because it had obviously then it moved to Windsor, and there is the footage of this Matthew Shevlin header, and I'm sitting sort of open mouthed, not really believing what I'm seeing. And then you're sort of
It was a
your mind,
dumbfounding moment.
yeah, your mind is trying to sort of compute, well, what does that mean now? And then you're sort of trying to do the maths in your head very quickly. It was just an extraordinary, probably 60 seconds with what I saw with my own eyes in the match in front of me, followed just immediately afterwards by what happened at Windsor Park.
There had to be, though, forgetting Windsor Park, there had to be some murmurings or discussions at the time. Knowing that Linfield were ahead against Coleraine within the Oval, between followers of Glentoran thinking, do we really want to do this? Are we really like our season's over here? Is a draw is helping Linfield? Is this what we're doing right now? Drawing with we are helping Linfield right now. I'm sure there were some fans thinking, guys, what are we doing? Get rid of this.
Yeah, I think there probably would be an element of that there as well. I think the Glentoran, I know there's it's easy to suggest that their season's over. Obviously the European playoffs to come. And the big thing about that, obviously, as well, is the you know the chase for fourth place in the league, which again, if you explain that to someone who doesn't know the format of the playoffs, you'd be going, well, fourth place, that doesn't sound great in a 12-team league. But obviously to have the advantage there of a home game in the playoffs. And of course, what we don't know if there will be four teams in the playoff. A lot depends on the team finishing in seventh, whether or not they have the requisite European license. So it could be that the team in fourth could end up potentially getting a bye to the playoff final. So there was a lot at stake for Glentoran. Again, with that horrible last gasp defeat that they suffered, and then Crusaders also winning, it makes it a real uphill task for Glentoran. But at that stage, they were probably thinking, oh, this makes it more difficult for us. They probably maybe weren't even sort of thinking, even some of the fans, they maybe weren't even thinking, oh, were we doing Linfield a favour? Or just there was just so much going on at that few moments there. I think Glentoran fans were just so dumbfounded by the nature of the Johnny Russell own goal. Of course, that sort of weird irony that you sometimes get in football, Johnny Russell being from Larne as well,
Well,
that own
he
goal.
had to stretch out for the ball. If he did not
Oh,
get his
it's.
boot on it, there was, I
Yeah.
believe, Lee Bonus lurking. And Lee
Yeah.
Bonus had an excellent chance, well blocked, late on that fell to him. He wrapped his boot around it and it thundered off the defender. So
That was
he
Johnny
was not gonna
Russell, funnily
yeah,
enough, just a couple of minutes before that. Yeah.
so he was not gonna miss again.
No. Oh, no, it's extraordinary.
And after taking out that game against Cliftonville last weekend, where they won 8-1, for Lorne, they were going into this game having only won of their past four games. They'd only won one of them against top six opposition in all competitions. So it's not like they are in sterling form against top six sides. And there they were with all the injuries at the back as well, which meant players like Leroy Miller had to be used elsewhere. Bulger's only back, but Sean wants out for the season. So's Levi Ives. You've got Sean Graham playing out wide, Leroy Miller playing in the other, Tomas Cosgrove slotting in. So it's not like they were sitting there with all their weapons ready to go. And especially Ives and Cosgrove, they're so fundamental to how they play. So going into those last 20 minutes or so, 1-1, trying to scrape a goal away from home, there have been question marks of, are Lorne petering out? Have they been found out? Are they now worrying, knowing that it's title or bust? And a season is made up of hundreds of moments. And in that moment, and in those last few months, they kept pushing, the ball goes in, and that little bit of luck and a little bit of fortune. They kept fighting to the very end. They kept somewhat of a cool head in those late stages where you think all of a sudden you're just... And there was the few pot shots and dodgy crosses and all the rest, but they stayed firm and put in a great ball, which then fortunately then trickles into the back of the net. You got to give Lorne a huge amount of credit to come back, because they haven't always done that in recent times, and that will be a massive momentum swing from a league point of view, but from a push now to finish off this league campaign. They are on cloud nine right now. That's a huge moment for them.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it, Peter, to think even the resources and the playing personnel that Lorne have available to them, you know, the proverbial embarrassment of riches there. Even Lorne have been stretched by those injuries, because as you say, that they all have sort of tended to focus on the defensive line there. You've got, as you say, Tomas Cosgrove has had to move inside one to play as on the right side of three central defenders. Sean Graham, you know, a naturally left-footed player and a terrific left foot he has as well, having to fill in at right wing back, and then Leroy Miller filling in left wing back, which in a way that was probably the one that surprised me most, because you have Micheál Glynn on the bench there, who could, you would have thought would have fit it in seamlessly at left wing back, and that would have allowed them to keep Leroy in midfield. But look, it's Tiernan knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to get the best out of those players. I think, you know, there weren't many downsides to the 8-1 win over Cliftonville, but one of them was just one of those completely innocuous moments where Roshan Williams pulled up with an injury. He just stretched for the ball. There wasn't even anybody really particularly near him. And again, he missed last night. So it's vitally important that they got Cian Bulger back in there in the centre of defence. But it's strange to think, out of all the great players that Lorne have, they're being stretched as well. And the other thing as well, Peter, of course, they have so many players who have been walking a disciplinary tightrope for weeks, one booking away from potentially missing crucial games. I think actually Sean Graham was booked, and I think that may be his fifth booking, so he may well miss the big game against Linfield. But the likes of Lee Bonas has been on 9 yellow cards for what seems like weeks on end. And you know yourself, Peter, you've watched him play plenty. You know what a wholehearted competitor he is, and he's going to throw himself into a tackle there. And you're just thinking, oh, blimey, if this goes wrong here, he's out for 2 games.
And that's his season wrapped up when they've got big games against Linfield on the way. You're absolutely right. You mentioned Micheál Glynn not getting into the team there. I thought that was interesting, and what that said to me is that Tiernan Lynch was prioritising shape and prioritising style of play and elements of those players over the like of a like-for-like replacement, putting in Micheál Glynn on either side of those wing-backs, because he started the season and Madrid last season came in to replace Ben Doherty as their left-sided wing-back. Then you bring in Levi Ives, which was then there's question marks over. That's interesting. you've got a very capable young up-and-coming left wing back who's very much a wing back, and then you know there's no questioning Levi Ives is the quality, but he's continued to develop in that Lauren team. But we all know Micheál Glynn's qualities. He is a burner of a player, gets something down that wing, and what that said to me is they wanted something more stable and more solid and perhaps building up from a passing point of view rather than that closer to a winger style wing back, let's just say. So that was interesting to me, and it was clear that Tierney Lynch had a game plan, and playing someone akin to the skill set of Leroy Miller was more important to the overall team, and it worked out. Flipping back now to Windsor Park, because it could have been a great night for Linfield if that swap, if the Russell rescue meets the Shevlin intervention didn't happen. And for Linfield, they did not have a great first half against Coleraine. This rejuvenated Coleraine with all their energy and attacking flair was really on show. And when McGonagall put the ball in the back of the net and they exposed a bit of space in between the centre defenders, they were well worth it, Coleraine. And David Healy had to step up and make a key decision. So on comes Fitzpatrick at halftime. He gets the goal from kind of nothing, but that's why you have a striker like that, the instinctual style striker that Fitzpatrick is. It comes off his shoulder, who cares, it's a goal. And his work then helps get the penalty. So as much as Linfield looked as though they were going to panic, they turn it around very quickly after the break. And Coleraine looked to somewhat be subdued then going into that second half. But as the half went on, Healy brings in these changes. We all know, we talk about some of Lauren's injury concerns right now. Linfield have had to deal with that as well. They don't have the biggest squad when it comes to big name players at the minute. They do have injuries in key areas. Like, people will forget Fallon. If you're at the start of the season, he was supposed to feature in this. I know he's had multiple seasons now with injury concerns, and they've really required the likes of Jamie Mulgrew to step up, and really now recently getting Chris Shields back into the team after his season looked to be potentially over from that game against Cliftonville. So they looked to slightly tire, and on comes Newbury to shore up the defence. And when that works, it's great. But sometimes when something like that happens later on, fans are crying out saying, oh, we should have went for it. And you know what? Linfield should have seen this game out. But unfortunately, they didn't. And the stack keeps going. Coleraine still remain undefeated, and they've put another spanner in the works for Linfield. And when you look at things that haven't went right for Linfield this season, and we can look at it now from a season whole point of view, holding on to Leeds, especially at home, is right at the top of the list of things that have not gone their way.
Yeah, very, very un-Linfield like, isn't it? Normally, that was. For so many years, Linfield title-winning teams there, sort of once they got ahead, you knew there was very, very little chance of them giving up that lead, and they saw out so many games in that way. I think probably, Peter, just in general terms, that the number of goals that Linfield have conceded has been a surprise this season. But having said that, they still deserve so much credit, and I don't believe it. There could yet be a twist and a turn in this title race. Who knows? But I mean, Linfield have now moved on, I think, to what, 83 points, which was the figure that Larn won the league with last season. So I mean, look at the standards there. Larn have already surpassed their total from last season, and they still haven't won it as yet. So Linfield have pushed them so hard this season. And you mentioned it there as well. I think possibly if both teams had their strongest 11s on the pitch, there probably wouldn't be an awful lot between it. I think probably where the difference is the strength and depth that Larn have. I think we touched upon this maybe in a previous podcast, Peter. When you look at the number of times, if you look at Linfield team sheets from this season and you're going down through the substitutes and you're talking there, young up-and-coming players, and they have, you know, they've come off the bench to make an impact in games, you know, the Braden Grahams and the Aidan Dockerys and players like that there. But really, it's been an enormous ask for those players, as young as they are, to step into a Linfield team. I think if you speak to Linfield fans, any Linfield fans that I've spoken to this season have given David Healy enormous credit for getting Linfield to where they are with this panel of players. I think the frustration from Linfield fans is almost now directed towards the board, as if to say, why wasn't David Healy backed more in the January transfer window? I mean, they signed Ethan McGee, which has been an absolutely outstanding signing so far. But possibly, and I mean, it's easy to look at it with hindsight now, but I know a lot of Linfield fans said at the time he was the only real sort of major arrival in January. They probably maybe would have needed two or three more of that sort of calibre.
Well, what's the big signing for Lorne in the January transfer window? It's Chris Gallagher. And he is a centre midfielder. And that's been the area for Linfield. Yes, they have Mulgrew playing out of his skin, rolling back the ears, as people would say. All that industriousness. And then you have Chris Shields coming in. They've relied on the likes of Josh Archer in there as well. But where Lorne have, probably in the same role to Archer, maybe Sloan, who is a bit more experienced, they just don't have, when they're down and when they're looking on the bench, or even just to shore up that first team, they don't have an extra body of the quality of Chris Gallagher. And Ethan McGee, even in that game on Tuesday night, he's a wing back. He's then put into midfield. He's shoring up the defence a bit more. Even Chris Shields, we've seen him playing at the back for Linfield. So there's been a lot of stress in that central area. And as well as that, you look at Lauren bringing in Levi Ives. You might compare that to Ethan McGee. And Ethan McGee's been an excellent signing for Linfield already. Really comes through as one of the new young starlets in the league. There was always these questions up front. And we knew going into the season that McDade might not feature till later on. And he just hasn't featured at all. And they spend money and they bring in Fitzpatrick. And overall, goals have been okay for Linfield. It's been pretty decent. The big concern was at the back. And they've been helped a lot by the re-signing of Finlayson and Ewan East. He's been a big loss recently as well for them. That's worked out really well. But they've had to really rely on McGee and East and Fitzpatrick to work out. And McKee's had difficulty with injuries, but they were relying on Annette for a long time to step up and not only be someone that could come in and be a difference maker off the bench, but start multiple games and go on a run, and he was a key contributor. That is the difference, and I'm not here looking at the books, but from a pure squad building point of view, Linfield don't and haven't made the same kind of moves and have been not exactly had their hand tied behind their back, but you can see how take one striker from a mid-table team or even from somewhere else, that could have been the difference in a couple of these games.
Yeah, very true. I mean, the Matthew Fitzpatrick there, probably maybe not an out-and-out goal scorer in the sense that maybe Linfield fans would have been used to in seasons gone by. His main role there is he provides a bit of a focal point in attack, doesn't he? Sort of, you know, he holds the ball up, he brings others, midfield runners, into play. You know, Chris McKee has had sort of really good spells, and then, as you say, he's missed games through injury, so it's been a bit sort of bitty for him. But
some fans will wonder what this season could have looked like if McKee had continued on his early season form in the team. I don't know if we've really seen if McKee and Fitzpatrick can work in that team consistently together as a two or mixed into this collection of three forwards. And they obviously had Cooper out for a bit of that central stretch after being amazing at the start of the season. Going forward, their forward line, Joel Cooper scored 10 goals, which has been great. Cam McLean has come up and had a huge season for them, and he's obviously been probably their best player of the season, but they've had to rely elsewhere, and at the back was the problem. And up front isn't exactly a major area of we've got nothing here. It isn't barren, but you can definitely see an extra bit of spice in the pot could have went a long way, especially when we're coming down to the end of the season and there's maybe 3-1 or 2 points of difference.
Very much so. Again, you mentioned Kyle McLean there. He I agree with your assertion there. I think Kyle McLean has been Linfield's best player. I think he's really kept sort of stepped out of the shadows, even out of the shadows of the likes of Mulgrew, Shields, etc. I think he's really come into his own this season. The number of goals that he's had, just again breaking into the penalty area just at the right time to score those goals. He has really contributed. You're right. You know, the loss of Cooper for a while there, I mean, if you take him out of that Linfield team, you just take so much attacking spark and attacking threat. And obviously, Linfield, I think, look a much better side when Joel Cooper's in it.
What could define this season for Linfield will be not holding on to a lead. That's been the thing. And you must say a part of that probably has been from the fact that they just haven't had the quality, or legs are tiring late on in games. And you can even extend that not holding on to the lead to the point where they had whatever it was, 8-10 point lead over Lauren at one point, and then that slowly got chipped away as Lauren went on the lead. That Coleraine game is not an anomaly. Other people will look around and think there was that game. You have them 1-0 up, 2-1 up against Glenavon in February there. Last minute goal goes down to 2-2. They were 1-0 up against the Swifts in January at home. Swifts win that 2-1 late on. They were 1-0 up against Lorne at home in November. Lorne come back 2-1. Even all the way in August, 2-1 up, 3-2 up against Carrick. And Carrick still bring it back to 3-3, even all the way there. That's like, I don't know, between 6 and 8 points lost there late on. And as you said there, this is not to deny this hasn't been a great season. There's obviously going to be stumbling blocks along the way. For long stretches of time, Linfield were on title winning form. They have a points total with two games to go that could and would have won the league in other seasons. And I think they've improved in those games against the top six sides. They've been more ruthless and have won out. But it just feels as though for this squad, as excellent as it is, compared to the opposition that they have in Lorne, they've squeezed a lot of juice out of this lemon. But Lorne have probably been able to get more juice from just a bit more lemons. They've had the slippage there, if the analogy can be stretched.
That's probably quite a good analogy. You know, that's a good way to describe it there. I think, you know, Linfield, if it turns out the way that most people think and Lauren now hold on to retain the title, I think there'll be a lot of regrets at Linfield. They can be very, very proud of what that Linfield squad has achieved this season. But obviously, at Linfield, you're based upon trophies that you know, that's what you're judged upon, league titles and cups. And of course, they could still win the Irish Cup. It could still be a very successful season. But as you say, just the Coleraine result and the conceding the late goal, it's not a one-off by any means, and it could prove very, very costly for the Blues in the end.
People will say, if you're from the Linfield perspective, that felt like a loss. When it comes to the last two games and this run-in, it all but is, because now Lorne have a 3-point advantage over Linfield, but most significantly in this, they have a huge goal difference advantage over Linfield. Linfield have scored 80 goals. Lorne have scored 79. The difference, goals conceded. And this has been somewhat a historic defensive season from Lorne this year. Only 20 conceded. That's almost half the amount of goals Linfield have conceded at 38.
Wasn't it? But you mentioned there about the goal difference. Last Saturday, whenever Lorne were thumping Cliftonville, and just every time they scored, it was almost like a race to get the ball back into play again. There was no sort of, oh, well, we're 5 up here or 6 up. It was, nope, let's score more. Just relentless. And I suppose at this stage of the season, you look for any advantage you get, don't you? You wouldn't know there could be a set of circumstances where it could come down to goal difference. So when you were in the ascendancy, as they were, on Saturday, they did absolutely the right thing. They didn't take their foot off the gas at all. They just just kept scoring goals. And as you say, they're usually fairly hard to score against. So that's usually a fairly successful combination, isn't it?
Yeah, for those who are interested, that is a positive of 59 goal difference for Larne, 42 for Linfield. So let's not even bother talking about goal difference changing. Linfield could win 6-0, and how that would be swapped is, you know, not it would even it just is no point. So that gives Larne the advantage, and I don't think I'm being bold saying Larne now have one hand on the Gibson Cup because of the situation they're in. And they can lose to Linfield, and all they then need to do next Monday, which chatting to some Linfield fans, they didn't feel confident going into that game anyway. But they could lose to Linfield, and then all they need to do was match that result. A draw wins them the title. Linfield are win or bust when it comes to the league title on Monday, so all eyes on that. But let's say Linfield were to win that game, then they would need to match Larne's result. As I said, only interesting thing there is that Larne are playing against Coleraine, who are wrecking everybody's season or frustrating everybody in the top flight. So who's to say they wouldn't do the same thing against Larne? And Linfield are playing against the Cliftonville side, who are still imagining what it's going to be like to be in the Irish Cup. So maybe that's the only edge where if Linfield can do it, but all Larne need to do is beat Coleraine. It would be a story in itself now if Larne were to throw this away, because it's in their hands more ways than one. They need one victory across two games. It would be a collapse if they don't do it now.
Yeah, I mean, having said that as well, though, Corrine wouldn't be probably the pick of teams that you would want to come up against at the minute. I think Corrine now have managed to get through that rocky period that they have. Obviously, the return of Matthew Shevlin has reignited Corrine's fortunes. McGonagall has chipped in with a few goals since his arrival in January. In the last couple of seasons, Corrine have kind of been maybe sort of limping towards the European playoffs, and then they haven't been able to find their form when the playoffs come. This year could be slightly different. Corrine are maybe just running into a bit of form now, and obviously Orne will be wanting to keep that going as they approach the European playoffs. So I think Larne will certainly want to try and get the job done on Monday night. I think there's probably an extra degree of satisfaction, isn't there, if you can go and actually win the title in your rival's own backyard. So no, I think I would be very surprised if by next Monday night we're not talking about Larne retaining their title. But look, that's almost a bold thing to predict anything in this league this season. It's been crazy, hasn't it? But in a fantastic way.
Like if Linfield were to win, I'm sure many Larne fans would be panicking, even though it'd be Coleraine coming up to Inver Park, even though it's in their hands. So there's still a chance for one of the craziest end to an Irish League season when it comes to top flight football still to be there, but by all accounts it's in their hands, and Larne get a draw, get a win against Linfield at Windsor Park, seal the deal and do it in style, which is what they'll be after. So huge night, huge moment for Larne. They push through. We were talking about their defence there, and we're chatting actually about the Footballer of the Year or the NA Football Awards Player of the Year of the season on the podcast last time. We haven't got that, but at the time of recording, we have seen the Team of the Years, and the one for the top flight is as follows. Unsurprisingly, there is six Larne players featured. Going from the back, you've got Ferguson in goals, Cosgrove right back, Bolger centre back. He's paired with Addis of Cliftonville. And then out left is Levi Ives of Larne. Midfield is Miller on the right, Rory Hale and McLean, the pair in the centre. Locals Benji McGee on the left side, or just wide, other wide midfielder. Then up top, Ryan and Bonus. For Larne, they've scored a huge amount of goals. Annie Ryan is the top goal scorer right now, and Bonus being up there and around there shows how dominant Larne have been at both ends of the pitch, and just shows how fantastic and impressive this side is. Do you have, well, anything shock you reading that team?
No, looking at that team there, it's difficult to argue with any of those, Peter, to be honest. Even, you know, the outstanding players probably for Cliftonville there, Johnny Addis, Rory Hill. I know they've obviously, Cliftonville had, up until probably recent weeks, have had a terrific season as well. And again, it could yet end in Irish Cup glory. Again, Benji McGee there, great to see a player from a bottom six team making it into that team of the year. I think that team was voted for by the football writers and the clubs themselves. So, I mean, look, the clubs themselves, you know, the players who play in the league, they're probably the people who are best placed to judge their peers, aren't they? I think it's certainly a good looking lineup there, and as you say, six Larne players, difficult to argue against any of them, to be honest.
There's no surprises. I'll say that Benji McGee is the closest you would have to a surprise, but if you were there to list it in a 4-4-2 formation, and it's always been that, and it's across all the divisions, that's where maybe you'd open up to the likes of Benji McGee out wide. One of the more impressive things is the fact that it's Ryan and the bonus. Sometimes with these things, votes can be split and it's one or the other, and then somebody else could sneak through. And I'm thinking Ronan Hill might be one, but he would have to really be a forward or maybe put out wide instead of Benji McGee. Kirk Miller's probably in that category. I mean, he's had lots of assists and has been excellent since the turn of the year for Linfield, and is, I've always said, is one of the more underrated players. If you were to take him out, I don't know there's anybody that you would cry out for to put in there. So perhaps Roy Hill is hard done by not being put in that team. Maybe you put it to a 4-3-3 and stick him up top and maybe lose McGee. But, you know, McGee's kind of out wide striker. He somewhat reminds me of Sean Murr from last year. He was on this team out wide. So, I mean, look, everyone knows I'm a massive Benjamin McGee fan. I like a lot what he does, and it's a great honour for him to be there. Ferguson Nets, yes. Cosgrove and Ives, I think, is the first two players I would have put in this team. And maybe you would argue Donnelly instead of Bulger at the back from a Larne point of view, but
a toss of a coin stuff, really, isn't it, Peter? There, they've both been excellent. The only other name from another team that I could think possibly, Ben Wilson, maybe had a really good season until it was disrupted a bit by injury. But again, as you say, that is a good point you make there. Usually, maybe it could be with, if you've two strikers like that, it could be one or the other. I think that's maybe other teams, players from other teams acknowledging just what a good partnership Bonus and Ryan are. They are, they really gel so well together. They bounce off each other so well. Quite often, the number of goals that one sets up for the other as well. Ryan in particular, Andy Ryan is a terrific crosser of the ball. And the number of times that he has put one into the penalty area and Lee Bonus would arrive with the header. Again, it's the sort of thing where if one of them wasn't scoring for a couple of weeks, generally speaking, the other one would sort of take up the mantle and you know, score the bulk of the goals, and then in a few weeks' time the roles could be reversed. So just, you know, the goals have come thick and fast throughout the season. They've never had a spell where both of them have had a bit of a goal drought, and obviously that's a real recipe for success if you've strikers scoring as regularly as they have.
I was talking there with Lewis Bennett, we don't have the three nominees for Player of the Year. That maybe leans to McLean and perhaps to Larne players, because I thought maybe Rory Hill was going to be the one that might sneak in there. So I would say it's McLean plus lose one of Bonus, Ryan and Ives, maybe even Ferguson, because the Mountie hasn't conceded. So I would maybe say Andy Ryan, McLean plus your favourite Larne player, even though I've been pulling for Levi Ives to win Player of the Year for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, possibly. I think that could well be, that might very well be the shortlist there, the names that you've mentioned. And again, you know, all of them would be deserving nominees, wouldn't they? Kyle McLean's had a terrific season. I think Andy Ryan has just taken his game to a totally different level this season. And he was good before whenever he arrived. But I think seeing him over the course of a full season has been terrific bonus as well. And again, sort of some of the other players as well that you've mentioned, they're certainly whoever wins the player of the year this year will certainly be a deserving recipient of it.
I think with Ryan, what he showed this year is that he was not a flash in the pan. I don't think there was anything last season that suggested that. But as people got used to his style, had a bit more tape on them, as you might say with him, he's shown that no matter what, he wins with power, pace, and determination. And he's always been that hardworking player that says, try and beat me. Even if you know what I'm going to try and do here, try and beat me. Great shot, a lot of precision as well, and he has had one of the great striking performances of this year. And you compare that with, I know we've had many great striking partnerships in the Irish League from a success point of view, from a stats point of view, but these two in particular, the fact that they've had to share it amongst themselves. And the fact that there's been goals from elsewhere in the team, of course, it's not like it's only two of them, but I think they will be remembered, even if it ends this summer, as a truly great duo, when striking partnerships seem to be a dying art.
That's true, actually, Peter. You know, when you think of sort of some of those strike partnerships from the Irish League from down the years, like even look at the likes of Portadown, you know, Fraser and Cowan and Arkins and Hamilton and whatnot. Probably football has changed so much now, hasn't it? Just quite a lot of teams go with maybe, you know, one central striker and other players playing off them. As you say, it's almost a sort of the great strike partnership is almost a dying breed in many senses.
It's become more of a wide man plus striker, like a Heatley and an Owens. I think outside of Bonus and Ryan, you might look at, we obviously the Thompson and Ferguson is in there for Linfield. That'll be going to the annals of time for me as one of the truly great, that'll never be taken away, strike forces in Irish League history. Arkins and Hamilton's definitely one. I think you probably then add in Boyce and Gormley when it comes to a true
Yes,
duo.
of course.
So there's probably other ones I'm missing. And look, Corrin fans are saying, give us 3 years of Shevlin and McGonagall and maybe there'll be something there. But yeah, it feels like a throwback. But then, you know, what is old is new again. And maybe two strikers is cool. One of the reasons I've brought you in here is, of course, for your wonderful insight, Stephen. But you know, behind the scenes, I have been waiting for a chance to chat Ballymena with you, a team that you follow with great detail. It has been a horrible season for Ballymena. There's been very little sunshine there in the showgrounds. I know you would probably highlight that it has been a continuation since maybe January last year, bar a little sparkle that was the Irish Cup. But you got a bit of good news there on Tuesday night that you will not be the side's bottom team. That will be Newry City, which now sets up Newry for not relegation just yet. The best they can hope for is a playoff, which is definitely, at the minute, an unlikely scenario, but a very possible one all the same. So Newry are last. The best they can hope for is a playoff, which means the best Ballymena can hope for is avoiding the playoff, but a playoff is looking very, very likely. What has this season been like? You've got a lot of young players, a lot of change since that David Jeffrey era. It's a very clear line was set in the summer. There's some remnants of that former team, but it was a big clear out. Lots of players put in a rookie manager, goals has just been the problem, and perhaps just trying to blend this team together has been a part of it as well. It's been a difficult watch, I imagine.
Hugely challenging first season in charge for Jim Irvine, Peter. And I think Jim probably knew some of the difficulties he was going to inherit. I think, Peter, if you speak to Ballymena fans, a lot of Ballymena fans will tell you they've had this fear over the past maybe 3 to 4 years that Ballymena were sort of kind of sleepwalking towards a relegation battle at some point in some season. Last season was a struggle, particularly after Christmas. It was kind of papered over to an extent by the run to the Irish Cup final. But then what people maybe don't realize in there was things like 14 games without a win in the league. But during that same period, Ballymena kept winning through rounds in the cup, and obviously it didn't look as bad. But obviously then when the club parted company with David Jeffrey in the summer, whoever came in there was going to be looking at a very different picture, even financially as well. If you think back to 5, 6 years ago when Ballymena finished second in the league, and slowly over time, it didn't just all happen overnight, but slowly that team started to be dismantled. Players went to other places, and the one sort of common thread, Peter, was that any player who was leaving Ballymena at that stage, they were going on to better things. Adam Leckie, Jude Winchester went to Crusaders. You had Kofi Bamer going to Larne, and then eventually across the water, Johnny Addis went to Cliftonville. So, I mean, it was a really, really good side. Leroy Miller obviously then went to Larne as well. And the difficulty has been over the course, season on season, from that has been getting replacements of that sort of quality. I think a phrase that David Jeffrey would have used occasionally was, it was getting more difficult as with each passing year to keep pulling rabbits out of a hat, trying to get replacements for these guys. And I think that was mirrored in, Ballymena's performances in the league, and then even when you look at it in the league, they were still a threat in knockout competitions. They got to a lot of cup finals, didn't actually win too many of them, but they were there or thereabouts. But certainly the last couple of seasons now has been really difficult, and this season in particular with Jim has had a real baptism of fire for his first managerial post.
And of course, let's not forget last January, there was the talk of the tightening of the belts was the term. It was having to deal with some of the checks that have been cashed, and how do you deal with that squad that wasn't raking in the same kind of income via success that had previously been there to sustain that output. So you lose a couple of players there. You set yourself up now with the new manager and the clear out. And one of the things that struck me about the Ballymena side last year, and then a lot of times this year, is that it didn't have a balance. It was trying to fit senior players into some form of team where you had the most amount of quality there that still worked. It was just trying to fit the good, experienced players on the pitch, and perhaps that didn't really flow into the best team. And I'm thinking of some wide players who maybe weren't particularly nippy or didn't have the skills from a crossing point of view or a dribbling point of view. There was a lot of square pegs, round holes, but looks good from 1 to 11. And as Ballymena have got better, and I don't think you've ever really went on what you might consider a run, but as what Jim Irvine has started to learn about his squad from an outsider's point of view is that you see the likes of Gawn finding his way into the team, Noah Stewart finding his way in, Calvin McCurry obviously was brought in January, and we're starting to see something that resembles a shape. And okay, McCullough does start at left back. You can fit other players around there. Barr comes into midfield. How do you fit Fraser Taylor into this team? Is that what you've noticed bit by bit? The squad was becoming an 11 and a team.
Yeah, it's again, Peter. The difficulty is, I think Jim obviously brought in a lot of new players in the summer, and I think the real difficulty was by Christmas, I think he had sort of realised that maybe a few of those weren't up to the task. And having already had a rebuild in the summer, he more or less had to have another mini rebuild in January, with lots of players going out. I think I'm going to use something like about 40 players or something this season. The squad list looks like an electoral register, to be honest. But I think it's getting that sort of consistency. There have been the players who have sort of been the mainstays in among it. But it's really difficult, Peter, I think, when you're watching a team who struggle to score goals and maybe struggle to create chances as well there. That has been a real issue for Ballymena this season. Now, it has it sort of, I was going to say, come good in the end. It's maybe that's not the right choice of phrase, but obviously Tuesday night's results, Ballymena beating Glenavon and Newry losing to Carrick, that obviously confirmed Newry's relegation. Ballymena now staring down the barrel of a playoff, which again, I think that the difficulty there is that maybe some people, some Ballymena fans might think, oh, it's job done. We've avoided automatic relegation. Looking at that championship, and you know very well, Peter, but the championship this season there, some very good sides in it. I don't think it's any sort of foregone conclusion at all that that Ballymena would just walk over a championship club in a two-legged playoff.
Goals have been the problem. There was a stat there a couple of weeks ago coming out where two-thirds of the past 50 league games for Ballymena not only had the results not been great, but of those 50 games, two-thirds of them Ballymena hadn't even scored. So that's not even talking about games where they score and don't get a result. So that's a difficult watch from a fan's point of view, and it's tough on the results side of things as well. But you've squeaked your way up into 11th, which is what you were really after. It felt like probably after turn of the new year, you're thinking 11th's probably the best we're going to get here, and goals have been the issue. You've needed 20-year-old Noah Stewart to emerge as an Irish League player. He's your top goal scorer, 6 goals. Isaac Westendorf was sent away back to Lorne. He only scored 2 goals. Ryan Wade, 3 goals, and he spent a couple, bit of the season there at Loughgall. Fraser Taylor is the player that's been sparking the eyes of a lot of other fans, but he's only contributed 3 goals, 3 excellent goals, very flashy goals. One of them a goal of the month winner, but it's not volume that you need to sustain it. But when you go into this potential playoff, it will be a case of just win across the two games. Right now, not that you're watching the championship week in or week out, what's the feeling amongst Ballymena fans? I know you're all pulling for a Dundella victory and for them to win out to save your blushes and avoid the playoff, but is there a team that you're particularly wary of in that championship that could be awaiting you?
I think, Peter, I can't believe the number of times I have heard the name Dundella mentioned from the lips of Ballymena supporters in recent weeks. It's become sort of almost an obsession. I think all Ballymena fans have suddenly developed a second favourite team there. Again, obviously unfortunate from Dundella's point of view that they couldn't come up. And I think everybody then knew that the scenario, Ballymena fans knew that it would require Dundella to win the championship for Ballymena to potentially then avoid a playoff. I don't believe that's going to happen. I think Portadown are probably in a strong position to go on now and win the championship, which again, many observers would have expected them to do. Possibly the only difference there is that maybe a lot of observers wouldn't have expected it to have gone this deep into the season, and then obviously they still haven't wrapped it up. Again, I've been sort of asking people who I know who support championship clubs, different championship clubs, and I would ask them who do you think is the best team in the championship? And the one answer that keeps coming back to me is Bangor. People who know more about the championship and who watch it more regularly than I do, that's sort of the overwhelming opinion that's coming back, is that Bangor have been a real force this season. And again, given what has happened at that club in recent years, it's not that desperately long ago that Bangor's fortunes had dipped so low that they were playing in the Ballymena Provincial Intermediate League against such luminaries as Desert Martin and Dunroy. So.
Would that be something? The team from so the team that was playing in the Ballymena Provincial League could be the team that beats Ballymena the relegated team. There's a story in
Oh yes,
that.
you couldn't make that sort of thing up. Sure you couldn't. But no, again, they've been very impressive. Lee Feeney's done an excellent job there. It's great to see. I mean, whenever I was growing up, Peter, Bangor were a real force to be reckoned with in the Irish League. In the days when John Flanagan was manager, and then you know, Nigel Best and that sort of thing. Bangor were a real force, you know, qualifying for Europe and, you know, reaching cup finals and things like that. It's been a sad demise, and it's great to see Bangor getting back to a high level again, Peter. I think they are probably a team that you would want to avoid in a potential playoff. Again, though, some good sides up there as well in the Championship. Institute, Kevin Deary's done a great job at Institute. And again, a side who have run into a bit of form late on in the campaign, Anna, who've been involved in the last couple of playoffs. So again, they would be looking to go one better. I watched their playoff last year against Dungannon. They led after the first leg. And people were thinking, oh, is this, you know, could we have a real story here of Anna reaching the top flight? Unfortunately for them, Dungannon managed to get over the line in the second leg. But again, you can't rule Anna out. The last couple of rounds of fixtures in the Championship, Peter, will be crazy as well. There's so much at stake.
Yeah, you think the top flight is twisting and mind-melting from what could happen in the Championship. It could literally, one day it's red and the other day it's blue. It can all change, and it will likely change by all accounts this Saturday. The one thing I will say about whichever team you're going to face, if there is to be a playoff, of course, Ballymena are going into a snake pit, because either they're going against Institute, who will have to go on a run to get there, who have improved massively, which will include a trip up to the Brandywell. Premiership strikers in, can they then maybe hold on in the second leg? Bangor, Arthurs, MacArthur, all the rest, all the young players that they have there. Portadown, who obviously have pretty much a top flight team in regards to what would probably be a bottom half side, obviously. And then Anna, the form side in the country. They're fast, they're rapid, they're exciting, and they've been there twice before. I don't know if I'd really want to bet against them for a third time. So whoever you will play, it will be tasty if it happens, and it'll be nerve-wracking, I'm sure, from a Ballymena point of view. But the difference is that Ballymena have been playing against tough teams all year and are finding a bit more about themselves out there. So that will be a story if and when it happens. I guess for Ballymena, it's just hard as well to plan for next year, because you don't know what division you might be in. Because you're hearing about the likes of Reece Marshall moving, you know, that's a move that had been circled around potentially happening. You know, there's all this talk of deals. This deal's already done for here or there. A few of them would, if there's deals to be done already for players going to Ballymena, it'll be written in pencil at best, just waiting, you know, and that puts you behind the eight ball for next season.
Very much so, which makes it very difficult to plan. I think even there, when we talk about promotion and relegation playoff, Peter, even the very concept, the very format itself, you're talking there, every season you're putting a team who has obviously, by the very fact that they finished 11th in the Premiership, they've struggled week in, week out. That you can say that about Ballymena this season. And you're putting them against a team who have finished second or perhaps potentially third this year in the Championship. So you're talking about a team who, albeit at a slightly lesser level, have been winning more matches than they've been losing. So, I mean, it's, you know, confidence comes into it. Confidence and form comes into it as well. And what you really hope, if you're a supporter of the Premiership team, is that maybe that extra wee bit of quality there, you know, a player who you mentioned earlier on there, you know, the likes of maybe a Fraser Taylor to just pull something extraordinary out of the bag might just make the difference.
It's funny, because across the, whatever it is, 15, 16 years that we've had the 12-team league, and let's be real, there's not been 15, 16 playoffs due to various licensing things and all the rest. But recently, I'm trying to even think off the top of my head, the last time that the Championship won out in that, obviously Anna have lost out in the past two seasons to Dungannon and the Portadown, and then you have COVID, and then you had the season where there was no Championship season. Warren Point maybe won out or something like that. Again, I need to get Wikipedia out. The difference this season is that whilst before, yes, the team that's in second has been on a good run, the championship side has always been a significant underdog. The difference this year, I think, and it's not just about Ballymena, is that this is arguably the best championship division it's ever been. From an excitement point of view, from a quality point of view, from a striking point of view, as I've spoken here before, you could probably take the eight best strikers across the division and they would go straight in to Newry and Ballymena and maybe even Glen Avon's straight, starting 11 straight away. So that says that we are in a different world, and it will be interesting to see if that continues on next year. So that's what's different this year, and that's where it'll be a real achievement, I think, for Ballymena if they are to win out, because they will have earned it. Whoever wins through that playoff will have earned it if it does in fact happen, because of course it could be whoever against Newry and they will survive. Ballymena has had a great season, but for Newry, just to touch upon it, it's been poor. It never really got going. It starts with a 3-0 loss to Loughall, and from there, it's like they tripped at the starting line. I know teams lose at the start of the season all the time, but they never had a run. They never had a good patch. The stat that stands out to me, it happened before halftime there. Red cards, 7 red cards this season. That's 1 in every 5 games. It's not exactly a win to loss ratio stat, but that's what stood out to me. They're on 17 points right now. If they lose both games, statistically they will be up there as one of the worst sides from a points point of view we've ever seen. Looking through the squad, there's a lot of experience, also a lot of exciting youth, but it is just not knitted together.
It just seems, Peter, I think it's just been a real season of turmoil for Newry. I mean, you think about it, even at the end of last season when Darren Mullen announced he was standing down, and we know just how far Darren brought Newry, that sort of revamped Newry City. We know exactly how far he brought them. He obviously felt he had brought them as far as he could. Gary Boyle took over. Again, bit of an unknown. Interviewed Gary a couple of times, a very, very likeable sort of fella. Again, results weren't going well. And Gary, to his credit, whereas maybe a lot of managers would say, oh no, I'll ride this out, I can turn this round. I think Gary accepted himself that he couldn't do it, and he stepped down. I think even then, whenever Newry brought in Barry Gray, a guy with plenty of experience then at this level. And obviously, I think Newry's demise this season, I think while people will be sad about what has happened at Newry, I think the situation with Barry and his health issues, I think that has maybe probably brought a lot more perspective to it, the whole thing. Obviously, Barry's health and well-being trumps anything that happens on a football pitch. And obviously, I think everybody associated with the league wishes Barry well in his recovery from that. And as I say, I think that has probably brought a bit of perspective to what's happening on the pitch. I think there, again, you mentioned about stats and potentially, statistically one of the worst ever. There's a very damning stat when you look at Newry's goals against column, which is now, I think, has crept over the 90 goal mark. I think if you're conceding that number of goals, unless you're scoring an absolute bagful at the other end, I think you're in for a real season of struggle, and that's exactly how it has transpired.
You don't want to be relegated ever, but from a Newry point of view, next season they will be trying to rebuild and set themselves up again, whatever division they're in. And someone spoke to me one time about their view on what was Portadown's eventual relegation. It probably mirrors Ballymena's more than anybody's, but or at least the situation they're in. But that season beforehand, where Tipton was out, Doolan came in, they lost bonus, but they then are able to scrape by in a shootout week to week with Warren Point. Then in the playoff, they scrape by against Anna United, and then they go into the next season, and it's they never got going. They were not able to reset themselves. And some fans of the club would say that it probably would have been better just to bite the bullet that year against Anna United rather than delay what they felt, well, they can look back on and say was the inevitable, reset themselves to the championship where they would already be in a position to be back up and gunning again. So if there's anything from Newry's point of view, they can look at this going, well, perhaps it's better just to start over again, or at least take a, it's a safer place to try and figure out what's wrong. There's not the same pressures, and you can set yourselves up for what could be years in the future of success, is perhaps what some might suggest. But look, relegation's fun, it isn't nice, and we'll likely get further into that later on in the podcast, where we can really focus on what just hasn't worked out for Newry. Talking about the championship there, of the teams that you were fearing there, Bangor was highlighted. There's also a team of the year for that. Bangor has four players, put it down as four players. Taylor in goals for Bangor. Then you have put it down as Chapman right back. Leopard from Institute, hyped up last week. Pairing Francis from Bangor in the centre defence. Rhys Neal, Bangor left back. Ryan Mays out wide. Eamon Fife, the other wide player, with Gary Thompson, all poor down players, in the centre alongside MacArthur. Interestingly, it's Jenkins and Ferguson, Dundella and the Welders, respectively, who are the top two. Not a massive surprise. I kind of thought maybe Arthurs would have sneaked in there, perhaps in place of Ferguson, but Ferguson scored a huge amount of goals. Shows you maybe how many great strikers there is and what competition there was to sneak up there and be in that team.
Yeah.
Would be a pretty good team in the top flight.
It certainly would, Peter. I was just thinking that when I saw that team. I always think there are good players in the championship. It's just a question of knowing where to look. Ballymena, as an example, they delved into the championship in January and signed Calvin McCurry from Ballyclare. Now, again, it was Calvin McCurry who scored the goal for Ballymena to beat Glenavon on Tuesday night, the goal which means that Ballymena will avoid 12th. Again, the fella has come in. It was a nice moment for him to get that goal because he's come in to a team in a higher division that's struggling to score goals. And on his debut against Loughgall, he came on as a sub and he had a chance. Ballymena were losing 1-0. He had a one-on-one with the goalkeeper and missed it. Could have earned Ballymena a point. But from then, he's probably struggled to, even have many sort of clear sights and goals. Just that's been Ballymena's problem, has been creating chances. So particularly pleasing for him then to net the decisive goal against Glenavon on Tuesday night. And obviously it was sort of coupled with Sean O'Neill saving a penalty as well. So nice to see that from Calvin McCurry. Hopefully that's... It's been difficult for him because quite often he's been played up front at Ballymena on his own. So, it's difficult for a player stepping up from the championship to take on that sort of responsibility. But no, definitely some very good goal scorers, some very good players in the championship. And I'm sure a lot of the clubs in the bottom half of the Premiership will be keeping very close tabs on some of those players over the summer.
Going into this summer, if Ballymena is to retain their top flight status, what should people be looking at and thinking about when it comes to what Ballymena need to add? Is it experience across the board, or is it a certain type of player that they really need? I know everybody needs strikers and centre backs and all the rest, but where's the area? If there's a certain aisle in the transfer metaphorical market, where is Jim Irvine looking in, and why?
Well, I think probably the obvious place to start there is just the lack of goals and the goals scored column. And again, you look at it, there are some good players in there, some good players in midfield there for Ballymena. Dylan Boyle's been a very good signing. And obviously Fraser Taylor, who had come in sort of just before the August transfer window closed on loan from St Mirren. Now, the likelihood there is obviously that he will return there. Again, Fraser Taylor, with the sort of diminutive stature that he has, I don't know whether whether he will have a career at in the top flight in Scotland, but he's the sort of player who has impressed a lot this year. I would imagine he would have caught the eye of some of the full-time clubs in the Irish League. And I think he's the sort of player, Peter, who if you put him in alongside players of a sort of similar caliber to himself, I think he would be a terrific acquisition for an Irish League club.
Yeah, how would he fit in a better team rather than being the player that has to do it all and drag the whole team out? You know, turn some things go other way. So, yeah, no matter what Ballymena are doing, goals is what will be on the menu, they hope.
Very much so, very much so.
This weekend, very much touted as the big game week 37, but it's a bit of a damper squib than it would have been. So there's not a huge amount to talk about here. To preview the game of the weekend is clearly the one on Monday night between Linfield and Larne at Windsor Park, which we can all see on the TV. Ballymena against Newry, it's a bit of a dead rubber now. Like, are Ballymena preparing now for a playoff? Like, what are they doing? Are they doing like a reverse Cliftonville where they're trying to get all their players prepped up so they can go to the Brandywell or elsewhere kind of thing? Is would that be the wise thing, or is it about trying to score goals and remember how to win?
Yeah, look, I think that this was the fixture that had been sort of talked up before the split. It'll be, this meeting of Ballymena and Newry will be at Ballymena Showgrounds. This will be the crucial game. The way that it's panned out, obviously now Ballymena have extended this lead. It's now an unassailable lead. Obviously, they're after Tuesday night, after Newry's loss in Glenelg, when obviously Ballymena are 8 points clear, only six to play for. So obviously Newry can no longer catch them. Newry's relegation was confirmed by that. I think now probably you look at it, Ballymena obviously starting to prepare for a playoff. Do you start resting key players? I mean, you don't want to be playing the likes of Fraser Taylor in what is now a meaningless dead rubber game and for him to maybe pick up an injury or something like that. So I think squad management will play a big part. There might be some players who maybe need some minutes in their legs as well, who may have a part to play in that playoff. So I would say it will be careful squad rotation and careful squad management from Jim and his backroom staff for that game.
Yeah, similar for Newry, really. It's keep themselves fit in the hope that Dundalo went up or down and it's all back again. So interesting to see what players are playing in that game. Cliftonville go against Glentoran at Solitude. Cliftonville, I don't think, had the same vigour or pep in their step, let's just say, in that North Belfast derby, which Crusaders won out on Tuesday night. Cliftonville, same thing as I'm saying every week, they're preparing for the cup. I think they're ready for the cup. And Glentoran, they'll still be pushing for fourth place if they can still make it happen. The eyes then are on Coleraine against Crusaders, because Coleraine, I think it's clear they want to keep up the momentum. Now they're playing players like Alfie Gaston, you know, giving the full start there against Linfield, who was quite impressive actually. His confidence on the ball was really caught my eye. So will that continue, or will they want to, how much of their do they want to show their hand against a team that they will believe they'll be playing against? We will see. For Crusaders, if they are to get a win there, they will have fourth place signed, sealed and delivered. So up at the Showgrounds, between those two games, you're hoping for crazy goals and entertainment and players for your fantasy team if you're still paying attention to score multiple hat-tricks.
I think my fantasy team, Peter, its hopes went south a long time ago there. I think my fantasy team has had a sort of a Ballymena-esque or a Newry-esque type season there. So although I believe yours is still doing quite well.
It was doing very well. It was in the top 10 for a long time, top 5 for a while, but I made some bad calls, forgot to change it one week, and yeah, unfortunately I'm out of the top 10 now. So and I forgot to change it on Tuesday again. Excuses, I know, but I was really feeling it for a while, but it just hasn't all worked out. So goals there, I'm going to go for Coleraine. I'm probably going to go for Coleraine and Glentoran in those games, perhaps. But again, you really can't tell what's going on in that score-wise. Elsewhere, it's Dungannon hosting Glenavon I think Dungannon beat out Loughall quite convincingly at home, and I think they will beat Glenavon again. The game they'll be looking at, and the key fixture actually on Saturday, if you can believe it, is Carrick Rangers against Loughall. That's a tough loss for Loughall in their push to get seventh, even if it's just from a pride point of view. Despite Dungannon's great run, that Carrick Rangers win against Newry makes it tough for them because they're 3 points behind, although they have the better goal difference. So Dungannon are also massive Loughall fans. So if Dungannon beat Glenavon, which I think they will, they will want a Loughall victory there to put it in a situation where it's Loughall 45, Carrick 45, and Dungannon 45, where Dungannon have the positive goal difference. Well, Dungannon and Loughall have equal goal difference right now, but Dungannon, unsurprisingly, has scored more goals. Hard to tell because Loughall and Carrick Rangers have been incredibly inconsistent. Dungannon are the team that are showing consistency. So saying Dungannon are 1-2-0, I'm going to say here. What do you think about Carrick Loughall? Home, playing at home for Carrick isn't an advantage for them. We've seen that. So maybe favour Loughall. I'm going to be boring and say 1-1 here if I'm going to make a prediction.
I think Carrick's home form has been a major disappointment for them this season. I think, obviously, at the start of the season, and Stuart maybe wouldn't come out and say this publicly, but I'm sure he was, you know, targeting that seventh place. That would represent progress for Carrick if they were to get into the European playoff. What he probably couldn't have predicted maybe at that stage was just sort of how disappointing seasons Glenavon and Ballymena, and as Glenavon and Ballymena have usually been the two sides that have been vying for that seventh place historically in recent seasons. Both of them well off the pace this time. Carrick have a great chance to get in there and sort of mix it with the big boys in the European playoffs. I think, Peter, maybe the team worth keeping an eye on there, you touched upon it, Dungannon, they may have just left a wee bit too late just to gate crash the party for seventh. But if they beat Glenavon, Dungannon's last game is at home to Ballymena. Now, that will be a Ballymena team by that stage fully preparing for a playoff. So I would fully imagine that Ballymena would rest key players for that. So if Dungannon can beat Glenavon on Saturday, they could, you know, potentially that you would expect them to beat a potentially weakened Ballymena side in the last round of games. And that would mean, I think, Dungannon would have won all five games after the split, which would give Rodney McGarry a real boost going into the new season. I remember in the early part of this season, Dungannon were down there sort of alongside Ballymena and Newry, and people were going, oh, it looks like it's 2 from 3 there. To be honest, Peter, even at that stage, I'd seen Dungannon a few times in the early part of the season. They maybe didn't get the results, but I was thinking, there's a side who can score goals, and obviously that's a priceless commodity in the bottom half of the table. Again, you look at it there, Tuesday night they beat Loughall, another couple of goals there from Tomas Galvin, who again is a player who I think they have quite high hopes for down there. So,
seems to be the next one. See, there were sparks about him earlier on in the season.
Yeah. Off the production line at Dungannon there. Yeah.
So, yeah, very impressive for them. It does look it's going to be a bit too late, but Loughall could maybe pull a rabbit out of a hat. And, of course, the big interest, it's in the Championship. If you want every permutation we could think of about the Championship, go listen to Monday's podcast. Got it out nice and early in anticipation of this. 2 podcasts this week. Yes, you're thinking, what happened to last weekend's games? I have done 2 pods. So if you've enjoyed this, and clearly you have because you're listening this late into it, you can go check out. It'll be the one just below this one on your pod player. Double delight as the season comes to an end. So check out that for all the Championship stuff. My gut tells me it's going to be Anna beating the Welders, Portadown winning. They should win against Nadella, but a draw. I think Portadown will be promoted on Saturday, and it will be a league win and a promotion on Saturday. And then I think it's going to be a draw between Institute and Bangor, which means we're in for a thrilling Friday night the following week. But I'll talk about that in the podcast next week. Of course, if Bangor win, Institute are out of there. So if for some reason you don't feel your team's game isn't that as exciting. There's going to be exciting games. A Shamrock Park reported down, a game up at the Brownie Well between Bangor and Institute, or Annie United against the Welders. So, get stuck in. Stephen, it has been a delight as always to have you on. Where can people find you online if they decide they want to hear more Ballymena Techs, or they want to tell you that, I don't know, you've slandered their team vigorously?
Peter, they can find me on X, formerly Twitter, at Stephen_sport. You'll also find some of my work on live text updates on the BBC Sport NI website.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
If we are talking before September or any of that type of stuff, I don't think things have went well for Ballymena when it comes to the playoff. So fingers crossed, we keep our communication to WhatsApp. Until next time, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast this year. Do you have finally, I know we only talked a few weeks ago, so you probably had a name. Do you have a favourite for Player of the Year come Saturday night at the NI Football Awards?
I would personally, despite what we've said about Larne and all the terrific players there that they've had, I personally, my vote would go to Kyle McLean at Linfield. I think he's had an absolutely terrific season there. He's really sort of emerged from the shadows as a key man there, and I think he would certainly be a very worthy recipient.
You see, that's just the words of a bitter Ballymena fan. We know that this slemish skirmish between Ballymena and Larne is heating up, and he can't even give the award to a Ballymena player. There you go. Stephen, I jest. Stephen, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for your time. Cheerio.
Thank you, Peter. Take care.
Thank you for all the support this year. The next time we will be chatting, it will be, if you can believe it, just one more league game to go. Podcast should be out around Tuesday, I'd say, based on the recording schedule and the game on Monday night. But you have had two this week, so maybe a one-day delay isn't the worst thing in the world, but I appreciate all the love regardless. Thank you for listening. If you listened to both episodes this week, just felt as though I needed to get the most up-to-date thoughts and feelings out there. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, this would have been a great week to do it, because if you go onto Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast player may be, if you go to the homepage of the Kicking Match page on your podcast player, there'll be a button or an arrow or a little dots or a wheel, and you'll be able to subscribe, follow the podcast. It's free, and it means you get little updates every time I upload a podcast. For example, I randomly throw one out later in the week when I've already uploaded one, boom, you get it sent to your phone rather than checking through and thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe I missed that bonus episode. You can, of course, follow the information by following us on social media. It's at Kicking Match on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Football's great. Should be cracking again this weekend. I will see you next week. Until next time, tally ho, and chat to you soon.